You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Making Waves.
There's something pulling me away. Something crawling over.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode whatever it is. What is it this week, Chad?
172?
Let's say 110. It's a okay. Nice round number. We have the lovely ladies of The Warning with us here tonight. They will be joining us on Shiprock 2024. And it is so great to have y'all on the program. Thank you again for joining. I understand that you guys have had a long journey where you mentioned to me you are finally back home in Mexico. What brought you back home? Where have you been this whole time?
Wow. Where have we not been?
Yeah. That would be the question.
No.
We just came back from Europe and the US.
Yes.
It's our first time like being home for a while, but we're not like home resting. We came back to record an album. So, but we're home.
Yeah.
We're good. Our family, everything's good.
Everything's fine. But yes, it's been an exciting year for us. We did our first ever European tour where we were also supporting Muse on their European tour. This time around, so we got to visit a lot of new places.
Speak a lot of new languages, which was cool. It's just been crazy back home.
Yeah, love it. So what are you gonna do now that you're back home? I mean, aside from still think and constantly do music, which is kind of what is in your DNA, what fun stuff do you have? What relaxing things do you have in store for yourselves? Are you gonna treat yourselves in some way, some relaxation and otherwise?
Well,
I bought myself flowers today. That was like my
little treat. That's awesome.
Flowers. But we just came back, but we're working.
Yes.
So the relaxation part is just a bit funky. But just being like back home, speaking Spanish, that's a big change. Mm-hmm. And eating our food, like eating Mexican food after a long while of not eating
That's all we need.
I love it. Well, let me break the ice here. Is there one redeemable thing about Mexican food in America? Where did you, or in Europe for that matter? Because that was that's the freshest place you've been, right? The most recent. So, was there anything in your travels? So you are so happy to be home with your food, which I totally get. Was there anywhere in your travels that you found that was even close to the food you had at home in your travels?
Yes. So in Glasgow, we went to some really good tacos, but it was really like nowhere. We just like came around, and Rudy
was closed.
The restaurant was, and Rudy just like opened the door.
Rudy is her manager.
He just like opened the door, and he was like, "Hey, like, when are you gonna open?" And, like. We got tacos, but it was so good.
It was so good.
We ate Mexican breakfast.
Yeah, and
it was,
chilaquiles.
It was so good.
But it was like kind of like a happy crying moment because we hadn't had anything close to Mexican food, and like the whole team.
Yeah.
And we were speaking Spanish in Prague, and like everyone was understanding us.
They were Mexicans in Prague and in Glasgow, so we were just like, "Whoa,
nice."
I love that, Chad. What were you gonna say about Prague?
Oh, I was not going to say anything about Prague. I was going to say everything about Glasgow.
Glasgow has
like surprisingly spot on like dishes from all over the world. That's the one place that I remember very vividly being like, this place is insane. How are they way up here, way over here? And there's literally, you know, like no sense of that culture here. However, it tastes just like it and spot on. So they do their due diligence and their homework. That's for sure. Did you guys, so when you say you're back home, are you in Monterrey, right? Is that Monterrey?
Monterrey, Mexico.
Nice.
We're in the house right now, which is good.
And you just got home, right? You guys are gearing up. And what do you have? You have but going back on the road to do some dates with, well, like Guns N' Roses?
Yes!
Huh? We leave in
a week. Yeah.
And we're opening for Guns N' Roses in the U.S. That's insane. So it's last year, we opened for them here in our hometown, Monterrey. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. But to be invited back
and out like, to their country,
that's insane. We're very excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. They were just here. Well, I'm in Nashville, and Chad's in Detroit, and they were just here in Nashville, and that was the Carrie Underwood's portion of the party, which was super weird and unpredictable. I didn't get to go, but I had some friends that went, and that was super weird and unpredictable. But I love the fact that it's like, okay, it's Carrie Underwood, and then it's like it's going to be The Warning. Like, how cool is that? Like,
that's super excellent. Cool.
Like, awesome. Like, awesome company to be in for sure. Was there a handful of those dates with Guns N' Roses?
In Mexico? You know, we had two that we were going to do in the United States, but we unfortunately couldn't make one, but we're going to be in the Florida one.
Yeah.
We're in Hollywood, Florida.
Gotcha.
With Guns N' Roses, yeah.
Florida. Gotcha. Hard Rock, the outside, the big space.
Yes.
Where
we get, you got it.
You'll have so much space. I mean, so much fun. It's an interesting space over there in Hollywood because it's very not to talk shit about Hollywood, Florida, but the idea is like, wait, what? There's a Hollywood, Florida. And then you get there and it's literally just like the idea of a Hollywood island in Florida. It's cool. Like where that Hard Rock thing is massive.
Like,
yeah.
With that purpose. Okay.
Yeah. I got really surprised. I thought
you were pronouncing it incorrectly.
I got really surprised. Like, what do you mean Hollywood in Florida? But yeah, it's.
That's exactly.
Because we have no idea of any geographical thing in the U.S. We don't know where is what.
But we were like, Florida, but this is something new. And with Guns N' Roses, like, I mean.
Yeah, you would fit in just fine with all the rest of us Americans. We don't know where anything is either.
Yeah. you were just here in Detroit, though. I saw that your dates, your headliner run brought you through here. You guys play The Shelter, right?
I think so.
I'm going to trust you on that.
You know,
upstairs or downstairs in the venue?
Oh, The Shelter. Yeah, no, upstairs. Upstairs. I remember that.
You got moved up. That's awesome. That's huge.
Oh, I remember. Okay, yes. I got lost in that venue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's right down the street from me. So I saw you guys played there just like recently. I was like, dang, I wish I would have been able to go to the show. It's cool.
Yeah, and it was a very like tight tour. We did like 8 dates in 10 days, so we were just like I mixed every single venue. I remember that.
One of the interesting, well, the reason why I brought it up in general is an interesting thing that I don't know if you would even know being from Mexico, but so Eminem, who's obviously from Detroit, that movie 8 Mile, I don't know if you've ever seen it, this the battle rap scenes, those are all shot in that's from that venue that you guys play.
I didn't know, but when we got there, Charles was telling me that happened. I was just like, oh really?
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a little lore I wanted to spread around. How about you, Al? You got any lore?
Which kind of lore? Folklore?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I did my deep dive on you guys. I've been a fan of listening to the songs. You guys always populate. The algorithm knows me well because every time you release something, it always ends up in my release radar every single time.
Yes. And,
I work with an act called Zero 936 that you guys had done that collab track with, and I thought that was really cool with Grandson. Right, it was another Shiprock alum as well.
Yeah. There's so many weird tie-ins with Shiprock too.
Yeah, really. Hailstorm tour.
Yeah, there's several of those that came up when I was digging around on y'all too. It's going to be super cool. We can't wait for you guys to be able to go experience this thing and
for sure
and really dive in. I think our guests are just they're going to love y'all. So
we're very excited about it. We're really looking
Yeah. So tell me, tell me, because I don't know if anybody else wants to know, but I want to know, and that's all that matters. What's the songwriting process? There's some stuff that you guys do with your producer. And then, I mean, I've just been so enamored with y'all. You know, you go on YouTube and you search the things and it's like, oh my gosh, there's these three tiny little kids. And then you see the next thing is like, oh my gosh, they're growing. They're getting so good. It's like, how did this happen so fast? And I'm kind of going nowhere right now, but, it's just so cool to see real listening music, and it's real music. It sounds different than everything that's out there. It sounds broken down and fresh. And it's like, there's a point that's trying to be put across to people. And it's very clear what that is to me. Like, I mean, you know, not that I know the point, but it's like, it's obvious that you're able to express yourself. And I hope that you guys feel good and are proud about the music that you're putting out, because you should be. But what is the songwriting look like for you guys? Because it feels to me like you really kind of work on that really hard.
We do. Yes. And we take it very seriously.
The reason why we really became a band and we were like, okay, let's continue doing this, was because we started writing. So it has been like, it's really fun to see how this process has evolved, because we started writing when we were kids. Like, I think I was 12, you were like 9, and Danny was 14. So as we've grown up, the process has also changed, and like the things that we talk about have changed as well. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the process. It varies a lot.
It varies a lot, but most of the time, Powell really sits in the piano, which is interesting because most of the songs start out as ballads on a piano, and then we just kind of like rockify them together. The process involves a lot of different opinions as well, because like we each have things that we think should be. I think as sisters, it's the one process where we fight to the most.
Yes.
We do. In all of our, like, in every sense. Yeah. Like,
it's petty sometimes.
Yeah.
But I feel like because we are sisters, mm-hmm. we can really communicate properly during the songwriting process, which I feel like it's so important. Mm-hmm. And also there's sometimes like it's really hard to communicate what you're like seeing in your head or what you're hearing. And because we know each other so well, we can kind of like get it and move a song towards that point. Mm-hmm. But recently, like this year, we've been writing a lot with other people.
Yes.
And it's like our first time doing that. And it's been like funky, not funky, like in a bad way, but like opening up that process to more people. Cause it's always been very personal for us, cause it's us sisters, our opinions. And now strangers we've never met and we've just known for 2 hours.
We don't know their brains, where they're going.
We're not just writing with other people, but it's been awesome.
Yeah.
Like hearing all those new opinions and different points of view over the same thing. It's always just like so awesome. So now that we're writing new music and we're about to hit the studio and actually record it, we're very excited to see how these new processes will translate into the actual album.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's so cool. Especially having that new dynamic in the room where you're all kind of looking and going, oh my gosh, this is so unusual. But you know, it's part of it is you have to do that to expand, right? You don't have to do it, but part of it is it's healthy to get that other opinion and then the ego check of him. I mean, somebody who can be honest with you. I mean, your sisters can be honest with you in the songwriting process too, where they go, that's stupid. That's not a good idea, right? But then to have that other person in the room where you want to say to them, hey, that's not really what we're going for. And then figuring out a way to craft it so that you make it go the way that you want to, and all those things, and all in a good way, nothing nefarious going on. But it's really fascinating, the songwriting process. Having been here in Nashville forever, for me, just living in the songwriting community it's so fascinating, especially here where it's like they get in a room and it's like bang, 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 and people. And the same thing with LA and in New York, it happens there. It happens in a lot of places, obviously, but it's super interesting. Have you had a big blowout like that? Has somebody left the room and has someone been like super pissed and held a grudge for like 3 days? Has that happened yet?
No, never.
Thankfully.
Like this huge, like I feel like it is the best thing that has ever happened to us in our jobs is that we speak two languages. So if you don't know this person and you're kind of like still testing the waters on how to communicate your ideas properly, you just start saying it with a smile and it's like, I kind of don't like that. What do we do? But
it's not in a mean way. Sometimes we just do it so we all know we're on the same page.
And we can
we're trying to do different things. So we just kind of like talk it out quickly and like try and do as best as we can. And honestly, it is very helpful.
It's awesome.
That we speak Spanish.
But sometimes there are people who speak Spanish. So, it's like, oh my God, hi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you though, if I was in the room writing with y'all and I didn't speak Spanish and y'all were speaking Spanish, I would know without question. The first thing I would say is I would be like, they're totally talking about me.
Oh yeah.
They totally hate this idea.
Well, this is garbage.
I love that y'all do that though. You got to take advantage of that stuff. It's so great.
That's a skit. That's like a TikTok skit. You guys,
it's totally a skit. Line it up, make it happen. It's fantastic. It's a great idea. Yeah.
I don't know if this is a touchy subject or if you don't want to talk about it. So I think you should, because it's something I literally just found out today. But so Ellen DeGeneres like went hard on like supporting you guys, and then essentially I knew about her support, but I didn't know that you were followed. You ended up going to college at Berkeley, and then they followed you around filming your lives for her Ellen tube. Just out of speaking of social media, in that space, how did that feel? Like, how did going to school, a music school, obviously having these cameras following you around shooting things, how did that work with the contingencies of being siblings, you know, working in a creative space and also learning together?
I just want to, like, first I want to clarify, like, I know that first I forgot that happened.
Yes.
Like, I just, it's not present in my memory at all. But now that you mention it, people imagine, like, a whole film crew following us with cameras. We had a little handy cam that
they sent us.
Yeah, it was our parents recording and interviewing us.
Yes.
So it was pretty chill.
I know. We did have a couple of days where this person,
they did bring the whole thing around.
Yeah. But like, we were there for 5 weeks and that was like two days.
And so it was
pretty chill.
But I feel like it was a nice little, like,
intro into what
our jobs would turn out to be in the future years. Because social media is a huge part of our everything. Careers. That's how our careers started, and that's how it kept blossoming. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, like, our parents were doing it with us. We were very protected. It was a good way to start, like, exploring how to, like, show our personalities and our work, and having people know you as people. But you're also doing this process when you're a teenager, and you're just, like, you don't even know who you are, but now you have to be somebody. So it's a weird process, but I feel that a big comfort was that the three of us were doing it together.
Yeah.
So if I was alone, that would have been really, like, stressful, isolating. Familiar. Like, I wouldn't have been together.
And still, you're totally right. Like, this happened 2015, and that for me feels so far away.
I mean, I don't like that number.
I think it's interesting because, you know, the reason why I brought it up specifically right now is thinking about the writing process, as Al was highlighting there, and bringing in people that are not inside of your core. It can be uncomfortable, right? Just like the cameras would be. But as you go into the next record cycle, or you go into the next situation where you are being filmed in any way, shape, or form, those are tools in your tool belt that, like, most people don't even have the opportunity to flex, you know, at all in their lifetime, let alone utilize for their, you know, for the betterment of what they are doing ultimately with their career. So I think it's cool. And I think at the space that you guys are at, and that's like information that I could have used back in the day.
Right,
for sure. Yeah. Like, how to deal with situations like that. You know, having a language, a different language to speak with my friends would have been so valuable outside of the blowouts that I can remember. So I just wanted to touch on it in that moment.
I had one yesterday. I took my daughter to her guitar lesson, and I overheard one of the students talking to one of the parents. And it was really interesting. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way. They said, and this kind of relates to what Chad's saying here, is she said, well, you know, the mom said, yeah, she doesn't really want to play in front of people because she's really self-conscious. And it's just really, it makes her really nervous. And the teacher said, well, that's okay. She doesn't have to play in front of people. That's just, you know, that's just not her thing. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. But at the same time, like, going out there with nervous hands and just scared to death, and is like, I would encourage I would encourage my kids or my students to do it once and at least know where you stand, like as far as how you're going to handle it. And then the thing is, you do it 3-4 times and all of a sudden you get better at it. You get more comfortable, you get more relaxed. I think there's like a real thing. And I experience this because I'm a half a musician, but I don't play out enough. I don't play out a lot. It's like I play in. And like you don't play as well unless you play multiple gigs in a row. And I want to get into that with y'all. It's like multiple, you know, it's like going out and playing a one-off is way harder from a musician standpoint than going out and playing 12 shows over 15 days, right? It's like you're standing up with your instrument. You're not sitting down. Your muscle memory is all trained. It's like, I feel like that's a super important thing to go out and play and learn, like Chad said, what's in your toolbox and what you have to offer. Then you bring those things back into the writing room and you have all these other things. It becomes the roundness of your artistry, right? So how do you guys feel like, okay, we got one gig. Well, that sucks, especially early on, right? Where there was one gig a month, probably or less, or like the one gig you were working for. And now it's like, you just said, well, we had 12 gigs in, or no, you had 8 gigs over 11 days. You said, I think something like that, but right. That changes as a musician, right? It's like the comfort level and those muscles get trained properly. How does that work for y'all?
Hey, so it's been a process.
Yeah.
But everything definitely. That you said, like makes definitely sense. Hits its mark because I feel we started like properly touring last year and our first tour was a 6-week tour. We did like 20 something shows in 6 weeks and our first proper tour was in the US. It wasn't even in our home country. So it was definitely very jarring and it was like taking like a deep dive into cold water. It was like, what is going on? And the first time that you do it, it's really tiring. You don't know how to like handle like all the emotional aspects. You're really tired, but you don't have time to be tired. You don't have personal space. Like all of that also really translates into how you
on
play.
Stage. Mm-hmm.
And like getting used to being that tired and giving your best performance, like it really helps you grow as a musician. It's like getting like, how do you say it? Like steroids. Like you just grow so much by having those experiences. And also, like, playing to different people every day. It's like having a new opportunity to kind of, like, prove yourself.
Yeah.
So it's also, like,
and also, that's where we're super grateful of every single rehearsal that we've had throughout our whole lives. Because you're that tired that the freaking automatic switch turns on, you know?
And you're just, like, live shows,
how do I even know how to do
become,
this?
Become, like, rehearsals because it's so weird. It doesn't matter how much you practice. You cannot replicate what like the live show to practicing. So like one live show equals like 20
rehearsals.
20 rehearsals. Yeah. Like it's weird. Like it's just
you need
it's
to practice
so
like
different.
The adrenaline. Like
and that's something you cannot like you can't just do.
Yeah.
So,
and also like communicating on stage is something that you can only develop while you're on stage. And it's a really important part about being a band. And
definitely.
It's gonna sound really stupid. But learning how to have fun every day on stage, when you're that tired, when like sometimes, well, we're all human. We all have bad days. And just like centering yourself and grounding yourself in your job and just like learning how to appreciate even though like you're not in the best spot. But I feel like we're a totally different band than we were last year.
And
we grew so much.
Touching on a tiny little part of what you said about the student, in our case, I am so, so glad because as a very shy person myself when we all started, I'm so happy that we got to do this together. You know, it was like, I'm going to step on stage completely by myself and
that
do this. Like, I feel like if we get to like show people that you're not in it alone. Like there's a lot of people who like music who can take that step with you. And also to like know that mistakes happen.
Oh,
and that is part of the live thing. You know, everyone will not boo you. They would just be like, oh my God. Like
this year,
part of the experience,
last year we played
know?
Around 110, 15 shows. And this year we, I don't know how many, but we played a lot of shows this year. And even though we're playing like almost every day, you still make mistakes.
And
it's learning
that, like you never do.
I would never mess up like that in a rehearsal studio. Like ever.
It just happens sometimes.
But sometimes you mess up and learning how to like first of all, like, take those mistakes and kind of, like, laugh it off, be chill, and learning how to, like, pick yourself up after that, like continuing the song after you mess up, like, all those things are things that you just gain with experience, and you have to do that by, like, letting go a little bit of, like, ego-wise, like, you can't take yourself, like, too seriously. Like, I need to be perfect all the time. Because then when you want to grow.
That's unrealistic.
And that's when you mess up. So,
and that's only things that you learn
by doing it.
And communicating. Yeah. Also, if people, like, if my sisters come to me and say, like, hey, you're playing pretty badly right now. You need to listen to that. And, it, like, you can be pissed off. It's okay. Like, I'm not like, woo, yeah, I love it when people tell me I'm making mistakes. But have to take it and listen to it and try to see how you can, like, be better and, like, start figuring things out.
Well, maybe, like, finding the root of why it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very mature thing to even think about. Well, I mean, I never even thought about, maybe I should figure out what's going on that made me forget, you know, forget anything in my whole life, you know. To like harken back to what you just said, I think the Rolling Stones said it pretty good with their, you know, it's only rock and roll, but I like it. And the idea of being, having empathy for yourself in the situation, and it's because it is just that, it's only rock and roll. This is entertainment. That's what you're doing. You know, your job is to have fun so that the folks that have purchased the ticket to come blow off the steam to their favorite band and their favorite music are encouraged to have fun as well. I don't know who your first tour was in the States. You said, was that with Hailstorm?
Actually, it was our own headlining tour.
Yeah. Like, we had our first headlining tour.
And it was our first ever tour experience. So like, it was just like a punch in the face of this is everything.
And like things that you wouldn't think about, like our team, like, all the settlements, like handling, like closing every show, the merch, everything that you just like we had never thought about.
Like we were all,
we had
like,
to.
We
do
all
it.
Grew, like as a team, we all grew a lot from that experience because we didn't know, like we actually didn't know anything about touring.
Like, even about the Hailstorm thing, even to pack, like we didn't know like how to pack.
you will never know how to pack. By the way,
you'll never know.
always overpacked. We toured with Hailstorm. Yeah. We were,
which was our next tour.
It was our second tour ever. So we get to that, like, I'm gonna call it a camp because everything was just like so organized.
It's insane.
And we were so green in like touring.
In touring in general.
So we were like just like I feel like we all learned so much. And they were so welcoming. Like they were very willing to like, hey, you know what? This is not how you do things. This is how you do things. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a comfortable place
to grow,
like get used to touring. Cause it was also a very long tour. It was also a 6-week tour. It was a summer tour. And they're incredible people. And we became really good friends, not only with them, but like with Lilith Tsar and all the crew. And it was just a lovely touring experience. And also we grew so much like logistic wise, thanks to them.
Well, there's where the Shiprock ties again. They've been on the cruise twice, and I would consider to be pals with them, and they're just awesome all the way around. Everybody in the whole camp. So what a great, I mean, and they're gracious enough to like hold out a hand and say, hey, let's help you with this. It's invaluable. You know, it's like, cause think of the alternative, right? It could have been awful. You know, and now you're like, you're going home. You're like, I don't want to do this. If this is what it is, I don't want to do this. Right. So it's super fortunate. That's so great that happened for y'all.
Seriously. Like you've had a string of incredible home runs all the way. And it's well deserved because you guys are incredible, not only as musicians, but humans. And just in the short period of time that I've been talking to you, I'm like, oh yeah. This is exactly what it needs, what you guys need. I was like, I wonder what they're going to be like, you know? So kudos, whoever your parents are too. Kudos. Your family unit is awesome. Love that.
If you don't mind, I want to change gears because Chad brought up the Rolling Stones. Ugh, thanks a lot, Chad. You made me think about things. That's not why I'm here. Okay. Girls just want to have fun. Thank you. So when I listen to your recordings, it really sounds I think the reason it sounds fresh is because it sounds live. It sounds real. Is that something that you, because there's a lot of music these days that's very processed and it all sounds, a lot of the modern music, especially rock music, sounds really great. I mean, sonically, it fills the whole spectrum and it sounds amazing. Like, you know, you can tell that they spent a lot of time on drums these days. Oh my God. But when I listen to your music, it feels more raw. And that's an observation, not anything other than an observation of what I'm hearing. And it sounds like that might be on purpose. I mean, the vocals sound a lot like there's a lot of one takes, and you know, there's obviously some comping that happens with vocals because there has to be, but it really sounds like there's some elements to it where it sounds to me like it's just you in the studio singing. Like it's really happening, and there's a producer there and someone kind of giving you direct. I mean, that happens, but there's something about it that just feels really upfront in the mix and very, it's like the vocals right on top of you and there's nothing else kind of in the way. Everything that's there is building the foundation for the vocal that you can hear and the lyric that you're trying to convey. How much thought do you guys put into the sonics of the sonic experience of the Warning?
Okay, so
on point.
So something that we've not only heard throughout our whole lives, but we live it and we experience it, is that our live shows, like the way we play live, usually sounds better than what we record. So what the attitude that we bring to recording is like, we want to sound how we sound live. Yeah. We want to capture that essence, that sound, that energy, and just put it in an album. That's usually like
the mindset. Goal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's how we record with that in mind. You know, we just kind of like rock out there. And in terms of the vocals, yes, I really focus also on that for it to sound very human. Like the chorus, maybe do it the second time around, do it again, but with a little bit more intensity as mm-hmm. a song, like grows, no, like just kind of like, even though it's the same parts, it just, we really, really like to focus on that. And in mixing wise as well, we're very into like, okay,
we're so nitpicky.
Mm-hmm.
Our mixers don't like us always, but, no. But friends that they accept.
Yay.
The process, which is good. But like, it's always like with that in mind, like just it's stuff that we're playing that we like, stuff that we would play that we are actually playing, mm-hmm. and things that we want to talk about. So it should feel natural. It should mm-hmm. feel
like, and us, I feel and, human. And I feel like that is a very key word. We want them to feel the meaning of the song. Like when you get in that chorus, I want it to hit you in the face and just mm-hmm. kind of like poof. Feel it physically. Right. So
well, and the other observation I have is that it's not, again, not a slam on anything else, but the music that I heard didn't seem like it was overproduced. It didn't seem like there was a lot of additional bells and whistles. And I think that, and again, that's just an observation. And to me, that lends itself really well to the live show, right? Because if someone sees a music video or listens streams your music and then they go to see you, it's like, it's like you just get to do what you do without all the other stuff that was never there to begin with. And frankly, it's only rock and roll, right? So it's like, how much shaker do we need in here? Like, do we need the synth thing? Do we need the keyboard part? Like, do we really need, and that's cool. And then for you guys, it probably helps out too with like the road and with expenses of people and other musicians or a bunch of more computers and more tracks. And I mean, everybody's probably got a track or two in their arsenal. It's just kind of part of the deal. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of three-piece bands out there that have done really, really well. And you listen to those bands and there can be a lot going on with three people. I mean, there's a lot you can do with three people. Muse. Hell, there's, yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if they're like on the road, but those,
yeah. You know, those three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we really do have that mindset. We let the song flow in the direction that it needs. And if we feel like it needs the extra element, we will go that way. But if it doesn't, we're like, let's just leave it to like what mm-hmm. we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so taking it back to you talked about your vocal recording process and your preferred experience, right? When you get to that second chorus, and do you have like a song in all of the songs that you've put out so far that you felt was the hardest for you, not just to perform when you're recording it, but to say out loud, to sing it out loud, to put the, you know, even if they are your family members, you know, even if you're in the studio or people that you trust, it still can be, you know, sometimes a cathartic experience and sometimes a really rivetingly rip me open experience. And I'm just wondering, you know, do you have any of those?
Yes, I did actually. A fun fact about my recording vocals is that I like to record in the dark. I like to move around a lot and just feel like in a cocoon of that I am safe in to like fully let out all the expressions. No. And then there's this one song in our latest album called Amour, which was, I have no idea what happened. I just literally started crying so hard. I was trying to connect really to the song, and it's a hard song because it goes in from really soft vocals and a low range in my person to a really high range and a lot of just like letting out stuff. And there's a part in the middle that's in French. So it was such a frustrating
experience
yeah, in general that I was just like all the things that this song represents, because it's a song about I'd rather be in a horrible relationship than to be alone, or in a horrible like place situation yeah. than to take away the company of other people and leaving myself healthier but alone. So I just kind of like wanted to feel all that so I could express it. And it ended up with a full-on mental breakdown.
I remember David. David Bendeth was the producer for that album.
Okay.
It just like sprinted out of the room. He went to hug you, and I know that it wasn't like the cutest moment, like to be feeling all of that. But like from when I saw it, it was David Bendeth being like a grandpa and hugging you and calming you.
It was so embarrassing because all his shirt was completely soaked in my tears.
Sorry. I remember that.
It sounds to me, I don't know.
But yes,
that,
no.
I don't know him personally, but it sounds like that's right up his alley though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. That's a pretty wild experience. I can imagine that, you know, resetting, you know, in that space. I don't know if you called it a day. I would assume that maybe there was a moment where you're like, let's take a little bit of time.
I don't think we called it a day, but I did took a break, but I went to guitars.
Yeah.
We recorded drums and then bass, and vocals and guitars are my right up my alley.
Yeah, you were recording for like a month straight. That was pretty stressful.
So I just like, hey, let's go back to recording guitars and continue vocals tomorrow.
I forgot about that. That was a horrible.
Do y'all speak French too?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
So we learned French our childhood. Like our school was trilingual. It was Spanish, English, and French. But we it's like when you I don't want to be mean, but usually when we ask Americans if they can speak Spanish, they're like, "Oh, we learned it in high school," and they can say like "la biblioteca" and stuff
that.
Like that.
We can't say that.
I can kind of read it.
Okay. I'm thinking at that moment, like when you had your breakdown and you went to the guitars, right then your sisters wish they knew a third language so that they could talk about you in that language.
Just get out of the room.
The two of them just had that conversation, roll their eyes and be like, you know, whatever it is, like, oh, here we go. A
drama dog or something.
And by the way, we've been recording guitars for a month and a half. Okay, we get it. You're playing the guitar. We get it. Like, but only in another language. That would be so amazing.
And even though we don't know another language, though, it's impressive. Still, our like telepathic thingy. I feel like we can understand each other very well, which is kind of like
we could each other without.
Yeah, without
when we work with people for such a long time, they start like understanding contextual Spanish, mm-hmm, and that's where it's like
for sure.
It's like no. We need to start talking like really fast and like. not getting it.
Yeah.
Or something.
Giving it a little pig Latin.
But so being bilingual, and Chad, you can probably empathize with this or sympathize with me. Being bilingual, see, for us, when we hear people speak Spanish fluently with one another, it's so fast, like mm-hmm. so fast. Is it the same with English when you hear Well, no, but you wouldn't know because you speak English too. But
it depends on the accent. But no, like when we go to the U.S., people speak like really. It's not that fast.
Deep south. You know, hey, man,
you go down south. It goes real slow now.
I will say this though. Being Mexican, I feel like we are very used to having people speak really loud and move their mouth a lot. Like. Over there, I feel like it's like you don't necessarily like you just need this.
We can't read lips sometimes, and that's pretty horrible.
I feel like that's where I don't understand, not because of how fast it goes, but I feel like I'm used to a visual language as well.
That's true.
It's really trippy. It's like when we went to Europe, like in the UK, understanding English over there, I was like, you know what? Don't speak English here. I don't understand a single word.
Yeah, we feel the same way here in the States.
I'm like, what are bangers in that?
Yeah. we feel the same way. It's like I turn on the subtitles on some TV shows sometimes.
Yeah,
Peaky Blinders, Chad, exactly. Like the subtitles are on. I look like a doofus, but I got the subtitles on. Yeah. It's supposed to be English. So I'm gonna go random here and change the subject again. One of my favorite bands is Haim. So certainly there's, I don't know, what am I talking about? Yeah. I feel like y'all are like the rock and roll version. I mean, they have some rock and roll elements to what they do, but I feel like y'all are like right there on the cusp of being the rock and roll Haim for sure.
I love that. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not breaking any new ground here because it's an easy comparison to make. It's like there's the Three Sisters, right? But it's super cool. I'm excited for the future, what the future holds for y'all, and I think it's nothing but positive things coming your way. I think it just seems natural. It just seems like this is what you'd be doing, and it's like it started that way, and nobody was forced into anything. It's like this thing that we do, and that's what they have, right? I think they're very musical family and that kind of thing. But I do want to ask, what was like, because you guys have like a pretty kick-ass, do you guys have the same rehearsal place? Is like that's that everybody knows about, that everybody's seen online? Okay, so it's the same setup. I mean, what God, that is like being home, right? Like you're home with the food, but then you're also like, hey, this is where we kind of sound our best right here. Like everything's dialed in just how you like it, right?
Definitely.
Our rehearsal, like it's literally right here.
It
has evolved throughout the years. Like when we moved to our current house, like this one, we were pretty young. I remember we didn't have this room, and I would have to play the drums in the middle of the living room. And it was so loud. It was terrible. It was just so bad for everybody. So the rehearsal room used to be like the playroom, like the TV room, and it stopped being the TV room and it became the rehearsal room. It just used to be like the drum set and your guitars and like a little amp. So over the years, it just started getting like a bit more serious, and I was like, oh, okay. And the rehearsal room is evolving. We are also evolving.
Yeah. And now we've grown with that room.
Oh, yeah. That's so cute. I don't want to think about that.
It David Bendis. He just pops in the screen. He's like, it's going to be fine. I gotta ask this question then. So then as you guys are traversing through your musical journey and this rehearsal space, let me back pedal here. Whose idea was it to record the first cover of Enter Sandman? You guys did. Not the most recent version, but the first version.
My dad's. Yeah.
Okay. So we don't come from a musical family.
Not at all.
My parents don't play any instruments. We don't have a history of any family member being a musician. But our parents love music. They love it. So we grew up in like a very music loving environment.
You're like watching concerts on TV.
So when we started playing, it was just like everyone doing their own thing individually. We never thought about being a band. It was just like, oh, we just like this and you like that, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And when Alice started playing the bass, we started playing together just for like, oh, we can play together. And then we were like, oh, we should learn the same song, because we would do different covers, like, just to learn by the ourselves. Instrument, like, just to, like, gain experience. Sure. And then we learned Enter Sandman. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I don't know the thought process that my dad went through. He was just like, let's record it. Mm-hmm. But the thing here was, like, we didn't have experience in recording covers, and it was like
recording audio or anything.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. We were really like, my dad was like, okay, but it's like, it has to be one take.
A one shot thing.
Like, cause we can't edit. Like, we don't know how to do any of that.
Yeah.
It has to be one shot. So what you see in that video, like,
it was like 20.
Yeah. We played it so many times. I remember whenever Danny was nearing up that solo, Alan and I would just like flinch, like, please.
I can't play this again.
Yes. Someone messed up. It was like,
No, we all get kind of pissed.
Yeah. but I remember, like, just being so satisfied when we saw it. Like, my dad put it together, and he uploaded it, and we really didn't expect anything out of it. It was just like, put it in the internet, and then our career started.
Well, and that's healthy too, because it's like, hey, we do this. Period. This is what we do. Oh, we recorded it. We video. Yeah, this is what we do. It's not like, okay, let's get out and promote this. And here we go. The game plan is coming together. This is our first step. It's like, it's so organic. And that's the way it should be. It's just like a love of music and people just doing things. Like, I always say, like, even in my life and my career, it's like, because I have some good friends that and people that I love that just don't do anything. Like, I like to do stuff. Like, I'm a doer. Like, let's do this. Like, let's do that. And that's healthy, I think. And that's where it seems like that's where the musical foundation was laid for y'all. It's just like, hey, we're going to do this. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, now we're doing, you know? And when you do, it leads to other things to do, right?
Yeah.
Doing nothing leads very much to nothing. So it's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that it started that way. It's so cool. And it fascinates me that you didn't have musical, not that they're not musical, but like, parents that played instruments and were like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to play the dobro or whatever, right? It's like super, it's super weird to me. I didn't know that until you just said that. It's really interesting to me because it even makes the case for the true organic part of how y'all started even more pronounced to me. It's like, it's super cool.
Everyone gets really weirded out when we say like, well, no, my mom's a dentist. Like, we don't even
Well, like, you all do have fantastic teeth. I mean, look, if everything falls apart, you'll always have your teeth, you know.
It reminds me of the Billie Eilish story, you know, with her covering her brother's song, putting it on SoundCloud, and then, you know, no one knew what that was going to be about either. It's a little bit different because there's a brother situation there, and it wasn't, you know, but like the fact that it just is what it is, and it ended up being exactly what it needed to be without, you know, it was the magic of divine intervention or whatever you want to call it. It's cool. And then look, it went on to do, you re-recorded it. It's now in video games and in a Netflix series, and there's a feature on it. And man, and now Metallica knows who the fuck you are. That's pretty awesome. You're opening up for Guns N' Roses, Foo Fighters, all this crazy stuff over the idea of your father simply just saying, all right, again, okay, we can't, you know, we just have, this is what we have to make it work. And that's the beauty of, I guess, like the art of creating and being creative and being in a band with other people, you know, the collaborative spirit in general. And your father was just, you know, just,
I am just like, I was gonna cry. Okay, so like, I feel like we get so cut up in like what we're doing right now, what we're doing next year, what we're already doing for the next year.
Yeah.
And like you just said a lot of things that have happened in our careers. Right. And it's like, oh my God, all of that happened at one point. And it happened because we did this thing before that and that thing before that.
Yeah.
Seeing like how like amazing our careers have been and these amazing opportunities that we've had. And like, we've had like the work ethic and the discipline to like take advantage of them. Sure. But like so many things that have just been stars aligning and chances of like
eight,
and it's so insane. Just like the first thing, our parents not being musicians, and the three of us just liking
these
instruments.
That's even right now, like me personally, I've had such a hectic work day that it feels so nice as well to just kind of like sit down and just enjoy everything like, okay, that has been, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And guys. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's been
thank you. That's awesome. Well, I will say we are going to put career milestone where my job is to make sure you have another career milestone, and that would be performing on Shiprocked in front of the most insane music fans you'll ever meet in your life. They will follow you till the end of your career. I promise, and that's a promise I can make for sure. And Chad knows this. They will follow you to the ends. Every show that you play after Shiprocked, that's a little bit bold, but just about every show you will play after Shiprocked, there will be a guest there that will say, "I saw you on Shiprocked."
And they probably don't even say anything, Al. You'll see them in the crowd.
They'll have their shirt. They'll have a banner. They'll meet you in the meet and greet. And they're like, "I saw you on Shiprocked." And you're going to go, "Why the hell? Shiprocked is everywhere. I thought that was just on a boat in the ocean." But it's really super fascinating. I'm so excited to plug y'all in with our guest community. And they're just a great bunch of people. And they're really high protein. Like they really love music. Honestly, it's not a cheap vacation, right? It's an expensive undertaking. You got flights, you got hotels, and it costs a lot for us to buy a cruise ship for 6 days, right? So the people that are there are really there for their friends and for the music. And you guys, I can't wait for you guys to experience that. I have a good feeling it's going to be one of your career highs to that moment anyway. So
yeah,
I'm excited. You know
what? The thing that you're talking about, like the fans, it's going to sound like I made it up, but we've had like other shows that like we played at festivals that we have meet and greets after. And they're like, "I just saw you today, but I'm going to see you in Shiprocked. I saw that you were on the head, I wanted to go out." And it's like,
yeah, it's like, "We'll see you there."
Like, we've heard that so many times, like, "Oh, we'll see you in Shiprocked." And we're like, "Okay,
I guess we're going to do it." Yeah. And now the other fun part is, and I can let our guests know now, this will be a little bit of a pre-announcement, is that y'all, from what I understand, you're going to be good to play in the Stowaways as well, right?
Yes, yeah. We are.
Okay, because that's a whole totally other awesome thing that'll happen. Chad is integrally involved, that word.
Galactic, planetary.
He's intergalactically involved with putting everything together and the song selection and making sure everything runs smoothly. And he'll come out and sing a couple songs too, I hope. So we'll all be battling that battle together. And that'll be super fun too. The way that whole thing comes around is one of the things our guests like the most. So have y'all in that mix on that. That's a big announcement just now for all of our guests who are going to be listening. The warnings.
We're so excited.
Participating in the Stowaways. So,
Al also will be there along the way. You know, we get to tag team that together. And to capstone a little bit, maybe, of what he just said, amongst everything else, the camaraderie within that community is also a separate version of the camaraderie that you would see with the fan base. So now you're in a room with other musicians, peers, people you don't know, people that you might be a little bit like, you know, shaky knees around, and they will pick you up. They will show you the ways, you know, if there's anything you can model the ship after is your experience in your mind, is your experience with Hailstorm, maybe, just simply because there is, a beacon there, and they're happy to guide you to the, you know, wherever you need to go. So,
yeah,
hopefully that's on a very, very long intergalactic cruise of life.
We did, and we just had a special moment, didn't we, Chad? I am nearly weeping.
And then here comes.
So here's what we're gonna do. We're nearing the end of our hour with us. I could do this for another two. But we like to do a little thing. It's a little nautical pun we like to have. We like to walk the plank. So this is a little bit of a rapid fire thing. You'll figure it out as we go. But you're going to walk the plank with us right now, and you didn't even volunteer for this. But I have a question for each one of you I would like to ask. What was the last thing that made you cry?
Oh, you got this. You got this.
I cried yesterday. Okay, I cried two times yesterday. That's a very lovely. And I was like, "I'm back home," and I started crying. And the second one was that I just saw this series called The Midnight Gospel. Mm. I have cried so much in my life, like I did with that series. It was, watch it; it's good. I cried.
Okay, amazing.
It's cool. Not valid, 'cause, like, I don't remember, but like my allergies.
Yes.
to cats, and we have
listen,
cats.
Listen, it's just honesty, man. It's just, you could have made something up, but you didn't. You went, you just went with it. I love it.
Oh, and the last time I cried, oh, actually, probably on stage. In the last tour, I'm going to be super honest. I was feeling super low on energy because I got sick. So my voice wasn't at its best. I had a tiny fever before going on stage.
It was a fever.
It was a fever, yes. But like, I got it down before the show a little bit. And I was crying really hard because it really frustrates me when I can't give my best I know. It's horrible.
Yeah. That's like bigger than stage fright, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like stage fright's one thing where you're like, I'm going to screw up a song. Well, we've already been over that. You're going to screw up a song. But then having that thing that you're not able to give 100%, God, what a letdown. What a bummer. Yeah.
It's a crappy.
So what's the oddest way that you've accidentally hurt yourself?
That's
my question, by the way.
All three.
Whoever can start.
Accidentally hurt myself.
I know this one for me.
When we're doing sound check, and sometimes I have my glasses on, and I don't calculate how low they are on my nose, and I put the glasses against like my face, it hurts pretty bad. That's usually how it goes.
For me, it's either one, getting into my bunk in the bandwagon because it's the high one. I have to like freaking climb over like Spider-Man into it. Or I actually have really flexible limbs. I've been trying to work on that, but I once dislocated my shoulder because I was dancing.
Were you doing like this thing? And just pop and you're like,
Like, I'm training a lot to make my muscles stronger for that.
So you can now dance. Your little heart out.
Love it.
Also, on stage, I move around a lot, and I have very weak knees. And sometimes I just take a step, and I'm just like, oh, my knee! And I have a physical reaction to how my knee hurts. And then I'm just like, for the rest of the show, I'm like, oh, my knee hurts. I always...
Do you think that anybody's seen you? Do you like move, like be, you know, like, you know, in the crowd, somebody's watching you play, and you're just like, do they think that
it looks like a rock and roll face, though? That's the good part about it.
Yeah, I feel like people might notice because, like, I do sometimes, like, oh, my knee, and
we'll have to ask.
Yes. Okay, so the last, we'll take a final walk down the plank together. But before I ask this last question, I do want to point out, Chad, I want to answer your question. I tore my MCL in my knee singing karaoke. So there's that.
That's amazing.
Just want to let the people know, you know.
Yes, that's important.
What song?
Yeah.
Oh, this is what makes it. I had the microphone wrapped around my arm like this, like like Pantera style, like this. And I was singing, It's Your Love by Faith Hill and Tim McGraw.
Oh, no. Oh, did you have a wide stance too?
You know, I had the widest.
I know. I could see it. I could see the widest stance.
As a matter of fact, the witnesses said I attempted a split.
No.
Well, that explains it.
That makes sense. So I got done with my amazing performance, of course. And I came off the stage and I'm like, you know, here's what I said. I was like, my knee feels kind of squishy.
Yeah.
And because your ligament snapped inside your knee. But I was I was partying so much that I didn't feel anything. And then 4 o'clock in the morning, when everything wore off, that's when I enjoyed it. That's when I enjoyed it the most. Was that feeling right there?
Perfect.
The ping of regret was never pingier.
I actually had the same thing, not karaoke, but that same exact part of my body. It was also the worst, accidental, weirdest way I've ever been hurt too. I got literally body slammed while wearing a ice cream costume in a music video that we shot by the girl who was playing a vampire in the music video, and she was like a professional stunt person. She's like on TV and one of those like NCIS shows, and she picked me up and flung me. And when I was picked up, not even when I hit the ground, but when she picked me up, for some reason, my foot was planted in a weird way and it turned on the ground and my knee popped and I wasn't able to walk off the set or anything. The day was done. So,
well, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm wearing an ice cream. I'm wearing literally one of those big Halloween ice cream thing, and holding a plunger. Actually, I was holding a plunger in my hand in the scene in the music video. I still to this day cannot use my knee in any pivoting situations that are like, if somebody's going to scare me and chase me and I have to pivot, you got me. Done. Sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay, so we've asked this question. We've actually asked this question before of a guest in the past, but I want to ask it. I wanted to ask it again this week because the answer is going to be interesting because it might be the same answer, but with siblings, it might be the same answer. If you could have a conversation with a deceased relative, who would you choose and why?
Ooh. Ay, Jesus.
You know, we're very fortunate. Yeah. And like
most of the family members that I've ever known in my life.
Yeah. And like
are
still alive.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what?
Okay, maybe maybe not family member then.
Just in like general.
Somebody that has.
I don't know, someone in your life that moved you that is no longer there.
Oh.
God, it's wonderful to be that young and have to think about it, isn't it, Chad? Yeah. Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Everybody's alive.
Soak it up. Sorry, that's very, very morose.
My great grandma, because I feel like I didn't get to know her a lot. But
hey, my mother's grandmother.
Yeah.
Such beautiful things about her. Yeah, and we just like never got to meet her. That would be lovely.
You're right. That would be lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What might have happened was the three of you would have picked the same one. So that's interesting. Yeah. Super nice. Cool. Well, the night has come to the end. Go ahead, Chad.
One quick thing. So we want to ask the next guest that we have a question that you're asking. They won't know who asked it until after they've answered it. So if you got a question and whoever that is, we'll propose the question as if it was the guest from last week. We can't tell you who it is. Answer the question. Then we'll tell.
I know. Okay.
Yeah,
you don't even know who the next guest is. So yeah, this is going to be good. This is going to be good.
Exactly.
Okay, wait. Let's review in Spanish.
What is it?
Quiero preguntar qué es lo más asqueroso que han tenido que comer de que
en de gira. Open Google Translate.
Ajá. De que la cosa más de que triste así miserable porque tipo estás de gira y no tienes tiempo. Go ahead.
That's okay. Cool. All right. We have no idea who the next guest is gonna be, but while on tour, what's like the most like gruesome thing that they've had to eat because there's like nothing near anywhere. It's just like, what's that meal?
The saddest, most miserable looking meal that you've ever had
because
on tour.
There's
that
nothing
you
else.
Feel bad, but you have.
Okay,
dude,
but
this
now
is
that
amazing.
It is amazing, but now that you've asked it, we have to do a little extendo version of the podcast, and you tell us yours because that's only fair.
All right.
I'm trying to think. Like we've been in some sad things on tour.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of mean, but we were in a festival in the Czech Republic. Was it the Czech Republic?
It was.
And they had some really bad mashed potatoes, but everything else was
very good.
It was things I just wouldn't eat.
Yeah.
So
either.
I just ate like a sad little plate of really bad mashed potatoes, and that.
Mine is also in Europe. It was a Tesco meal.
They're not the same.
I love that you asked that question because you remember that and you just hated it.
I was just like, what is this, man? I can't. Yeah.
Gas station dinner, right? And you pull up to that being like, oh, this is going to slap. Europe has such good food. Bangers and mash. And you walk into that thing and you're like, fuck is this stuff in here?
Well, the other thing is
even
too,
food.
Like mashed potatoes. As an Irish guy, like how can you screw that up? Honestly, like how do you screw that up?
Easy.
They were really watery.
So they were instant. They weren't even potatoes. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I can see it. I can see what the like the fucking thing that it's in the line. You're holding your plate and scooping it on there. And you're like, oh no, yeah,
prison food.
Can't throw it away. There's somebody behind me, and they're gonna see me do that.
Yeah. Well, it's been awesome getting to know y'all a little bit. Thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Seriously.
And safe travels and good luck and everything moving forward. We're definitely going to keep an eye out for you. All of our guests will be honed in on you now. So I'm glad we got a chance for them to get to know you a little bit before they see you play and meet you in person on the ship.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah, we'll see you guys very, very soon.
Thank you so much for your time. This was a blast and we'll see you soon. Oh my God. Yes.
I love it. But you feed my senses. You know you want it. You know that when I need you, do you need me? Yeah. You know I love it. I love it when you feed me. Yet you leave me begging for more. I feel it slowly creeping in. Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.